Good evening, everybody. I'm Franz Weinschenk, your host on Valley Writers Read. Privileged to welcome you to listen to another exciting story written by a talented Valley writer. Her name is Susan Norman, and she lives up in the foothill community of Oakhurst. Susan has entitled her story, Learning the Ropes, and here is Lee Murray to read it for us. Learning the Ropes.
Climbing to the top, the ones you love will come and go. You win, you lose, you sacrifice, chasing the rainbow. And if you should climb this magic ladder, the story will unfold. But just remember when you reach the top, all that glitters is not gold.
Learning the Ropes. Robert and I drive for a few silent hours through bleached chaparral hills. We've already talked about everything. The kitchen remodel got us to the Arizona border. Whether to renew the country club membership took us through to Flagstaff. And the price of gas in small desert towns compared to Fresno was good for at least an hour on either side of every fill-up. Now, late in the morning on the second day, heading north out of Albuquerque, the small change of our conversation has been spent. We've talked about everything. Everything except CJ. In her proper English accent, the GPS instructs us to prepare for a left-hand turn. Robert pulls off the road and under a carved sign reading Cedar Mountain School. Silently, I add the words, for troubled teens. We drive down a meandering gravel lane for a quarter mile before the building comes into view. Long and low, whitewashed plaster adobe tiles. The website said Cedar Mountain had been a missionary school for Native American children, brought into the technological present while maintaining continuity with the aesthetics of the past. It neglected to mention continuity it also maintained in that kids are still sent here against their will. Robert parks next to a large SUV with dealer plates. Who in their right mind buys a gas guzzler like that anymore? You're so right, I reply like a mantra, scanning the area for my daughter. At this elevation, the sky is an exact match to the pulsating blue paint chip I keep in my purse. The thin air vibrates with such clarity, I sense it just beyond my hearing, like the fading tone of a Tibetan singing bowl. I gulp for oxygen, inhaling the menthol tang of pine trees. Robert leads me down a path through scrubby pinyon and juniper to a central building he says is the dining hall. As we climb the stairs of a wide, covered porch, I feel lightheaded and grasp for his arm, but he's just out of reach. I grab the handrail for support, snagging the French tip on my ring finger. Hummingbird feeders hang along the rafters. A dozen manic dive bombers compete viciously for what they obviously believe is the last nectar in all of New Mexico. A hummingbird zooms in front of me, its threatening beak no more than 6 inches from my eyes. Its fierce glare challenges me with a sphinx's riddle for the right to enter. Then it zips away. A burst of female voices, loud and energetic, pour out the open door. We enter, take off our sunglasses, and blink at the sudden absence of high desert sun. The room is full of rustic wood tables, their benches lined with teenage girls and their attendant parents, cramming in to accommodate the extra bottoms of spring semester Parents' Day. A shadowy figure stands up and pounces at us. "You're totally late! I so knew you would be!" I hug my daughter, trying to find the girl beneath the bulky black jacket. My arms hold zippers, pockets, flaps, and straps. "Hi, CJ. Aren't you awfully hot in that coat? I thought you'd be in a uniform." CJ shrugs out of my embrace. Dr. T believes in self-expression. You should try it sometime. Hello, CJ, Robert says, fist bumping her shoulder. You were supposed to be here early, she accuses. You missed orientation and the tour. What happened? Did the ever-ready bunny-mobile run out of juice? Sorry, gummy bear, Robert says. Our hotel didn't have an exercise room, and the Gold's Gym was all the way on the other side of town. A tall, athletic woman approaches, smiling and holding out her hand. Robert turns to greet her. You know your father needs to work out every day, I explain to CJ, trying to sound more apologetic than he did.
You know your father needs to work out every day, she mimics sarcastically.
Geez, Mom, you've only been here for like 3 seconds and you're already making excuses for him. Hey, I protest, but she steamrolls over me. Why'd you even bother driving out here? I'm sure Dad bitched about gas prices the entire way. Honey, we wanted to see you. Whatever. Robert and the tall woman face us. The moment passes when he should make the introductions, so she takes charge of the conversation. I'm Dr. Trowbridge, the school's director. You must be Mrs. Jaskers. CJ is a wonderful young lady, so mature. I blink, but can't find the words to reply before Dr. Trowbridge excuses herself and walks to the front of the room. In a moderate tone, she says, Attention, please. All voices shut off mid-sentence. Dr. Trowbridge announces that parents and teens will spend the hour before lunch participating in something called Ropes Course, which I guess is some kind of arts and crafts like macrame. She leads us out of the dining hall and around the back to a broad, sandy path winding between 4 or 5 sprawling adobe buildings. We cross a soccer field and enter a grove of pine trees. Coming out into a clearing, we confront a structure made of poles, ropes, and wooden boards, all tall as the surrounding trees, but nowhere near as solid. It's a fantastical conglomeration of trapeze, chimpanzees, jungle gym, and pirate ship rigging. Definitely not macrame. The parents laugh nervously. Robert says, oh, no, not in a million years. Another says, I'm with you there, bro. Dr. Trowbridge puts her hands on her streamlined hips. Okay, CJ, why don't you show them how it's done? CJ steps into a crisscross of nylon straps, which Dr. Trowbridge adjusts and clips to a red rope. Mrs. Jaskers, would you like to belay your daughter? What's belaying? It's a safety procedure to keep her from falling if she slips. My heart had been pounding in the thin air. Now it screeches to a halt. I don't know. CJ says, don't worry, Mom. I rock at this. You won't need to do anything. Dr. Trowbridge helps me into the gear and shows me how to hold the rope that's apparently my daughter's lifeline. Now say, on belay, so CJ knows you're ready and it's safe to climb. On belay, I repeat, although I don't really feel ready at all. Now say, climb on, to let her know she's good to go. CJ doesn't wait for me to repeat this. She shouts, climbing, and launches herself at a knotted rope net, scampering like a squirrel. I petrify in place as she scales the net to a small platform. She pauses for an instant, bounces on her toes, then steps nimbly across a bridge of swinging boards to a second platform. There she clips onto another rope and slides down to the ground, lightly landing on her feet. The girls applaud. CJ bows with a flourish. A surge of love tingles the roots of my hair. Ta-da! Okay, Mom, now your turn. Then she laughs as if this is the most hysterical joke ever. A few more girls demonstrate the course. Dr. Trowbridge talks about personal responsibility and self-confidence, and we're herded back to the dining hall for lunch. CJ guides us to an overcrowded table, but the girls elbow their parents to make room. A teen with pierced lips orders a plump girl to go sit somewhere else. She jumps up immediately, but CJ puts a hand on her shoulder. Facing the pierced girl, CJ says, "There's plenty of space, Chica. No worries." Pierced girl shrugs. Plump girl sits down. And that's that. Impressive.
Hey, CJ, tell us what's for lunch today, the girls sing-song in unison. My daughter screws up her eyes in mock concentration. She sniffs the air. Let's see. A special menu today in honor of our esteemed parental presences. We begin with a tureen of purine puke puree, followed by a palate-cleansing sorbet of slug sauté. Our main entree, kangaroo livers flambé, closing with a tantalizing tongue teaser of banana fanny brûlée. The girls clap and cheer. My shoulders relax. They really like her, I said to Robert, sotto voce below the hubbub. Despite CJ's proposed menu, lunch is actually chicken tortilla soup and black bean taco salad with sopapillas for dessert. Those deep-fried dough pillows are a tremendous hit with the girls, who gobble them up in seconds. CJ licks honey off her fingers, declaring, best banana fanny brûlée ever. The afternoon is free for visiting. Since we missed the tour, CJ walks us through the historic buildings, showing off classrooms, the computer center, science labs, the gym, and the dormitory. The dorm's long hallway is cool and lit by skylights. This close to Albique, I'm not surprised to see framed Georgia O'Keeffe prints on the walls. The undulating landscapes look harmless enough, but there is something disturbing about those flowers. Orchids, their fleshy petals and deep purple depths, so intimately female. If these pictures cause indecent thoughts in a premenopausal woman, I wonder what effect they have on hormone-infested teenage girls. But that's ridiculous. Of course, New Mexico decor showcases local talent. Ridiculous. CJ opens the door to her room and we jam into a space just big enough for a twin bed, a dresser, and a desk. I can't help but feel relief that the walls are free of voluptuous prints. The only embellishment is a bulletin board hanging over the desk. CJ has tacked up a photo of our cat Olive, a small bunch of dried flowers, a class schedule, and a list of climbing commands. I smile as I read, on belay, belay to climber. I have you on belay and safe. Off belay, climber to belayer, I am safe. You can take me off belay. Climb on, belayer to climber. Okay, I'm ready. Go ahead and climb. Climbing, climber to belayer. I am climbing up now. Watch me, climber to belayer. Pay attention, this is hard and I might fall. Tight rope, climber to belayer. Pull the rope very tight and hold me. Slack, climber to belayer. Give me some loose rope. Don't hold it so tight. Robert sits on the edge of the bed. I'm pooped. What do you say you girls go off and let this old man take a nap? He pulls off his loafers and lays down on top of the bedspread. Plumping the flat pillow with dramatic emphasis, he tucks it under his head and closes his eyes in dismissal. CJ and I go into the hallway. What should we do now? I whisper. CJ looks scornful. In a voice to wake the dead, she shouts, don't know, don't care, and starts to walk away. Maybe I say this to surprise her, because I certainly surprise myself. Hey, if you don't have any other plans, why don't we head back to the ropes course? I think I'd like to give it a try. She stops in her tracks. Turning slowly, she says, well, I'm not, we're not. Her forehead wrinkles, then her eyes open wide. Yeah, what the hell? Let's go. The clearing is empty. The hot afternoon air, dry and silent, except for the chitter of cicadas. CJ hooks us up. Her sardonic grin tells me she's just waiting for me to back out. The grin fades as I approach the first challenge and grab the rope net as high as I can. Climbing, I squeak. On belay, CJ responds in a voice that's almost as jittery as mine. Scaling the net isn't all that scary, although the muscles in my arms and legs shudder with surprise. Step aerobics a few times a week in no way prepares me for the thick rope under my hands and feet, the sway and bounce of the net as my weight shifts. I try to move slow and steady, but feel just like a hatched spider creeping across a web for the first time.
My eyes fix on the rope in front of me as I clamber up one snaky rung at a time. Suddenly, I bang my head into the bottom of the first platform. Pain wallops me breathless. When it subsides, I cautiously pry my right hand off the rope and grab the edge of the platform. Then I freeze. What do I do now? CJ yells up from a very long way down. Get your feet up under you and stand up. I will strength to my trembling legs and push too hard. My knee unbends, my body shoots up, my chest smacks down on the platform. For the second time in 2 minutes, I am gasping with pain. What was I thinking? I can't do this. CJ will have to go find someone to rescue me, proving once and for all I'm a complete and total idiot. Are you okay? She shouts. Reaching for the center pole, I drag myself up. I'm level with the tops of the trees. The ground is a million miles away. I can't stop shaking. Holding onto that pole for dear life, I survey the next challenge, a bridge between the two platforms. But it's not a bridge, not unless you're Indiana Jones. Waist-high guidelines run parallel from my perch to the second platform. A dozen plank steps hang from ropes like playground swings, each plank at least a mile away from the next with a chasm in between. CJ had leapt from one rocking step to another like a gazelle. My fearless daughter. Pine trees hula dance before my eyes. I look up. The sky pulses like the paint chip in my purse. Pulsating blue, the color CJ decided to paint her bedroom trim before the vice principal's phone call put her redecorating plan on permanent hold. Our creative, quirky daughter had been hauled into his office for starting a yelling match with another girl and a boy. None of them would talk about what started the argument. Then another call. Same thing, different kids. 3-day suspension. CJ's grades plummet. The final straw? An actual knockdown, drag-out fight. One girl punched in the stomach so hard she vomited. A boy sent to the emergency dentist with a broken tooth. CJ's shirt ripped, her face scratched, her eyes swollen, black and purple. But still, no one would talk. Robert laid down an ultimatum. A full explanation or disciplinary boarding school. And I backed up his decision. Didn't question, didn't argue, even though my heart told me there had to be a different way. 15-year-old CJ chose silence and exile to New Mexico, 2 states away from home. I release my death grip on the post and walk to the edge of the platform. Grasping the guidelines, I take a step across the first abyss. Not far enough. My toe kicks the plank. It swings away, leaving my foot dangling in midair. My hand slips on the ropes, burning my palms. Panic. I'm going to fall. CJ yells, "I've got you, Mom!" The belay rope connects me to my daughter, a nylon umbilical cord. I realize that, yes, someday my daughter will be there for me when I need her. Someday, but not today. The plank swings back, and I snatch at the ropes, pulling the plank in until my foot can reach it. I put weight on that foot, and, heartbeat pounding in my ears, I will the other foot across the chasm. I'm standing on the plank, hands clutching the guidelines, almost steady, almost balance. Slowly, I make my way across the hanging bridge, one shifting, slipping swing after another, until the second platform is a solid reality beneath my feet. Gulping air, I try to calm my racing heart. "You're doing great, Mom," CJ calls. I risk a look down just in time to see a puppet-sized Robert entering the clearing and come up behind her. His voice is loud, but since he's yelling directly in CJ's face, I can only make out some of the words. He holds something in his hand, shoves it at her, pulls it back, and waves it around. Puffs of white waft on the currents of his anger. "What do you think? I can't believe you're in so much!" I watch the scene from the balcony. Robert's wrath is self-centered and all-encompassing. He does not look up. sudden comprehension jolts me like a double shot of espresso. All these years of silent support, all these years fading out of sight, I have finally disappeared so completely, it simply does not occur to my husband to wonder where I am. Not in a million years, as he would say, does he think to look up. Not in a million years would he seek me high above his head, hooked to the end of a rope like a piñata. My hands are surprisingly steady as I clip the carabiner into the zip line. I launch my body into space, swooping down like a hawk on an oblivious mouse. I whoop, and they spin around to witness my grand entrance. CJ grabs me as I land so I don't go down on my knees. Robert stares with a bewildered expression, his mouth hanging open, as if trying to remember where he's seen me before. Mom, that was... you were... The thing in Robert's hand is a torn teddy bear. Its head dangles by threads, bleeding clots of white stuffing. What's going on? I ask. Robert gropes in the neck hole and removes a handful of solid tubes. He holds out the evidence. Cigarettes. The bear has been gutted and refilled with cigarettes. It's not what you think, CJ says. What do I think? That I'm smoking, but I'm not. A lot of girls do, and they're worth something in trade. For what? Stuff, I don't know. Candy, makeup, cell phone minutes, whatever. Robert finds his voice. What difference does it make what you're doing with them? I can't believe I'm spending a fortune to straighten you out, and you're still the same disobedient punk you were at home. But, Dad, CJ tries to interrupt, but Robert is on a roll. I've had it with you. I'm done. You are not my problem anymore. Robert throws the teddy bear on the ground. He walks out of the clearing, shooting one glance back, making eye contact with me for the first time. Come on, let's get out of here. My feet start to follow him, but I trip over a coil of rope, the belay line connecting me to my daughter. I stop where I am. He is such an a-hole, CJ glares, challenging me to disagree. I pick up the mangled teddy bear and recognize Mr. Stuffington. Oh, poor Mr. S. What happened to you? That bear was at the bottom of my trash can. Dad must have been really snooping around to see it. Why did you throw your teddy bear away? Trading cigarettes for junk just got boring. And having a teddy bear is so immature. CJ's eyes got shiny. But he didn't have to rip him open. I push a puff back inside the bear. Maybe I can clean Mr. S. up and restuff him. Sew his little head back on. Of course, he's so full of nicotine, he'll probably have to go on the patch for a while. CJ manages a little smile. Thanks, Mom. Really. And Mom, you are awesome on the ropes. I can't believe you actually did that. So little encouragement, and yet I immediately take the plunge. CJ, why did you start those fights at school? She shrinks within her baggy jacket, me and my big mouth. But then she says, I couldn't tell you before, but today, you trusted me with your life. I guess I can trust you too. You know how you always tell me to pick my battles? Well, I did. If you want to talk about it, I'll listen this time. Really listen. But do you think we can go somewhere else? I'd love some cold water. CJ reaches for my harness. Sure, let me just unhook. Suddenly, her face turns as white as Mr. S's stuffing. Oh my God. Mom, I didn't do this right. You weren't on belay. If you felt, jeez, I might have killed you. Then my tough, brave, resilient daughter makes a strangled sound in her throat and bursts into tears. I hold her as she cries, murmuring reassuring mother noises, caressing her hair, and feeling more protective than I have since she was 9 years old. My daughter CJ, short for Kara Jean. Kara Jean, the troubled teen. Kara Jean Ann Jasker, a name suggested by her father, who was a chemist at Nabisco back then. Our daughter was the one to figure out his subtle play on words. She was in fourth grade, writing a report on how gummy candy is manufactured when she came to us one night, red-faced and crying. You named me after a seaweed extract. I had no idea what she was talking about until she read from a computer printout, tearfully sounding out the multi-syllable words. Kara Jean Ann's are a family of linear sulfated polysaccharides that are extracted from red seaweeds used by food scientists, she glared at Robert, a food scientist, in cooking and baking to thicken and stabilize processed foods, like gummy bears. Mom, how could you let him do that to me? She wailed. Caught completely off guard, I said, I'm sure he didn't do it on purpose, honey. But then I noticed the crooked, quirky smile Robert saved for his little private jokes. My daughter was right. He'd named his daughter after a food thickener. But if I admitted that, I'd be disloyal to my husband, and Kara Jean might never forgive him. Oh, sweetie, it's just a coincidence. We would never do that to you. So Kara Jean held a grudge against both of us. She declared she would only answer to CJ from then on, and the name I had once thought so melodic and charming was erased from lunch bags, school rosters, and library cards forever. Robert started calling her Gummy Bear soon after, a nickname we'd never discussed. CJ's sobs subside into sniffs just as Robert and Dr. Trowbridge come into the clearing. Dr. Trowbridge has left her implacably calm demeanor back in the dining hall. CJ, I'm shocked! You know cigarettes are banned at Cedar Mountain, and coming out here on your own is definitely against the rules. How could you do such a stupid and dangerous thing? CJ is on the verge of another crying jag. I put my hand on Dr. Trowbridge's arm. It's entirely my fault. I decided I wanted to do the ropes course and insisted CJ bring me here. She told me it wasn't allowed, but I can be quite strong-headed and impulsive sometimes. It was a blast. I try to pull off what I hope is a headstrong and impulsive giggle. Robert stares. Dr. Trowbridge sighs. I hate Parents' Day. All right, CJ, you're off the hook for coming out here. But as you're well aware, the cigarettes suspend your privileges for a month. Turning to me, she adds, Mrs. Jasker, one more infringement of our policies, and I will have to ban you from future visits. I give her a big, fake, ingratiating grin. Please, call me Ellen. At dusk, we walk down the path to the parking lot. CJ and I fall back behind Robert. Out of earshot, she says, I'll send you an email. You'll understand. I'll try, I say. You know, I think it was very brave of you to come out here on your own. CJ snorts, Well, I did have Dad's company on the drive. 14 hours of desert. 14 hours of blah, blah, blah. What a slice that was. I rub my thumbs across the rope-burned blisters on my palms. CJ, would you like to come home? She leans forward as if heading into a strong wind. Yeah, right. After today, Dad will make me stay here forever. I'll talk to him, I say, feeling a resolve born of vertigo, swaying rope, an unfamiliar sense of balance. The path ends. A full moon crests low hills beyond the parking lot. I hug CJ and feel the girl inside the jacket hug me back. I get in the car and tuck Mr. Stuffington safely in the back seat. Robert starts the engine. I roll down the window. On belay, I tell my daughter. CJ grins. Just give the rope some slack. Of course, I reply. Climb on, CJ. Climb on. She turns her face toward the rising moon. Climbing! Glancing back over my shoulder as the Prius turns into the highway, I feel no need to add anything to the words on the Cedar Mountain sign. Instead, I speak other words, words that, to the best of my memory, Robert has never heard before. I have the sneaking suspicion he'll become familiar with them soon enough. "Honey," I say softly, "we need to talk."
You can climb the highest mountains, swim the deepest sea. The only thing that matters is you will find your destiny.
That was Lee Murray reading Susan Norman's story, Learning the Ropes. The story is about a family of three. Robert is the father and a bit of a grump. Mom is the one telling the story, and then there is CJ, who is a spirited but in trouble daughter. She's been sent to the Cedar Mountain School for Troubled Teenagers. The story follows Mom and Dad on visiting day to the school. Before lunch, all the parents spend an hour watching their kids participate in what they call the rope course. It's a fantastic conglomeration of trapezes and jungle gyms. Daughter CJ demonstrates the difficult course with her mom acting as the belayer. That is, the person on the ground who, for safety's sakes, hangs on to the climber's lifeline. And guess what? That afternoon, Mom decides she wants to try her hand at rope climbing. Only this time, it's her daughter who's the belayer. Mom barely finishes, only to find out that CJ hadn't hooked her up right, so that if she would have fallen, she might well have been killed. Somehow, this incident brings Mom and daughter closer together and, as the last sentence of the story implies, Mom has made up her mind to rein in Dad. "Honey," she plans on telling him, "we need to talk." Friends, Susan Norman moved to Oakhurst about 20 years ago. She's been a web designer for the Sierratel Internet Company for 12 years. Writing fiction has been a source of great satisfaction to her, and tonight's story is the second time that one of her stories has been selected to be on our show. Thanks again, Susan Norman, for your contribution tonight. We hope to see more of your work in seasons to come. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online to kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our author will be Ed Miller. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.